place is different, special. The others don't want to talk about it because it scares them, but we all know it. We all feel it. Do you really think all this is an accident? That we, a group of strangers, survived? Many of us with just superficial injuries? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason, all of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason.
Brought here. And who brought us here, Jeff?
The island.
Two players, two sides. One is light, one is dark.
I see you in another life, brother. We have to go back!
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast. My name is Dave Gonzalez and I am haunted by a mean and smelly ferret.
My name is Joanna Robinson and I'm haunted by ice spiders big as hounds.
And I'm Neil Miller and I am haunted by grass spiders big as half dollars because I have met that spider in my bathroom and then had nightmares about that spider later.
We are all talking about animals that would haunt us because we are here to talk about season 1, episode 16 of Lost, the TV series. It's called Outlaws, in which Sawyer has a little showdown with a boar. That's the animal that haunts Sawyer. If this is your first time jumping on our podcast, we split our podcast into two parts. The first part is we call The Calm, and it will have no spoilers up to season 1, episode 16, Outlaws of Lost. The second part, which will be the latter part in the podcast. If you look down at your notes, you'll see a time code on when it will start. It's called The Storm, and that's where we get to talk about this episode of Lost using all of our knowledge, having seen all of Lost and lived the intervening years. But for our purposes right now, we are still in 2004. We're just crossing the threshold of the first 30 days on the island. If this is your first time joining us, which is something I already said, so if this is your second time hearing the phrase, if this is the first time joining us, you should know about our Patreon at patreon.com/stormofspoilers. There, you could join at three different levels. You could be survivors, you could be passengers, or you could be the small council, which is a hangover from good old Game of Thrones. At each of those levels, you get access to more awesome stuff. At the lowest level, you could just get access to our Slack, and I posted a very embarrassing rap album I made in my early 20s this week. So that's just all like at the $1 level. If you go up to the $10 level, you get things like our full conversation with David Sims that includes some Lost spoilery stuff, but extended guest conversations, more bonus podcasts. This month, our small council members all voted to make us discuss our favorite movies of 1999. So that's going to be an upcoming bonus podcast. Make sure to subscribe at the highest, that's $10 level, at patreon.com/stormofspoilers. Boy, that's a lot of talking from me. Joanna, do we have any reviews from our listeners?
Yes. I'm gonna do a little talking, but first I want to let you guys know that, you may recall in this episode of Lost, Sawyer and Kate play a little drinking game, that they call I Never, but most humans in the world call Never Have I Ever. Your hosts of this podcast will be playing a few rounds of that game throughout this podcast. As soon as we started, I started a countdown timer for 10 minutes. Every 10 minutes, we'll be playing a round of Never Have I Ever. We all have drinks. I don't know if you could hear this. That's my impression of Christian Shepherd.
Oh, my ice is melted. Oh, no, I just splashed myself.
But we all have drinks. We all have secrets to uncover, and we will be doing that in 7 minutes and 11 seconds. But first, I want to read a review. This one comes from Amy, who writes, a weekly treat, 5 stars. Finally downloaded Apple Podcasts just to leave y'all a review. I listen on Spotify. I look forward to the new pod every week. My storm origin story. I found out about y'all in a Facebook group for another podcast that I followed during Game of Thrones final season. In a discussion about what binge mode might cover next, there was a lot of interest in seeing a Lost rewatch pod. Someone suggested this one and I immediately looked it up, caught y'all for the very first episode and was so excited. While waiting for the next release, I started back at the beginning of the pod and I've listened to all the Game of Thrones and most of the off-season tour. Now I'm having to wait week to week, super sad. I just today started re-listening to the Game of Thrones ones. Love the pod, and the three of you have a great dynamic. I find your discussions both funny and enlightening. I started my last rewatch immediately upon finding this and finished a few weeks ago. My husband is finally watching the first time, so I just started back at the beginning again. Thank you for giving me an excuse to relive this show. This got too long. I'll have to share my Lost origin story in an email. So thank you, Amy. We look forward to that origin story in an email. By the way, if you want to email us, you can email us at hosts@stormpodcast.com. We love hearing your or Lost origin stories, your theories, your responses, your corrections, everything you want to email us. You can also find out more about the podcast at stormpodcast.com. Follow on us on Twitter at Storm Podcast. This week, our guest on the podcast is the lovely Kristen Russo, is back again to talk more Sawyer. But actually, we talked a lot about Kate, who I don't know if y'all know this, but
oh, so it's another hunk watch.
It is. It is. We talked about lesbian icon Kate Austin, as in an icon to the lesbian community, not that Kate herself is a lesbian. But no, it was interesting. It was an interesting and enlightening to me to talk to Kristen about that. So the lovely Kristen Russo is back this week. But next week, we have a guest who, our first guest who actually worked on the show, will join us next week. And we will let you know who that is next week. But I just wanted to tease that for you guys.
We got
someone from the show. All right. And then my last thing before I hand the mic over to Neil, is to read an email from you guys as promised. This one's from Rachel and it's in response to something that we've been talking a bit about in the spoiler section, but, it has to do with Walt and his powers, and the way that this email is framed and the way that we'll talk about it is spoiler-free. So we feel comfortable reading it for you here in the spoiler-free section of the podcast. Rachel says, hello, I have some polar bear thoughts, which is a great way to open any email, I think. Okay. Rachel writes, I just read Deep by James Nestor, which is mainly about free diving, but also discusses life at varying depths. My husband and I are both interested in sharks, so I found these parts interesting. Sharks use disturbances in the magnetic field caused by struggling prey, and they sense these disturbances using magnetite receptors at the base of their ampullae of Lorenzini. I was so bad at science at school. Okay, these receptors are particularly useful in deeper, darker waters. So how does this relate to polar bears? Mammals also have deposits of magnetite in the bone that separates the nasal passages from the brain. Therefore, we have the ability to sense magnetic fields. We are not attuned to it, however, because we rely mainly on sight, sound, and smell. Polar bears living near the North Pole experience winter months of near 24-hour darkness. Being deprived of sight may heighten their sensitivity to magnetic fields. While this does not prove the magnetic Walt theory, it does support it. Thank you for letting me nerd out a bit about science, something this science fiction teacher loves to do. Thank you for this rewatch experience, and it was lovely to meet y'all at Con of Thrones. See you in another life, Rachel. So the magnetic Walt theory, as we discussed in the spoiler section, and once again, this is not a spoiler to discuss it, is just the idea that perhaps Walt is manipulating, like, whatever drew the birds to the window or the polar bear to him has to do with Walt manipulating magnetic fields. That's a question mark that we have, but Rachel decided to give us some science to go with it. Dave, do you have any spoiler-free feelings about that email?
I mean, I like that we've established magnetic polar bear as a phrase because I feel that's going to serve as a band in the future. So we're really just helping indie music along. Actually, before we pass off to Neil, Joanna, you did want to mention another, sister pod that some of our commies might enjoy before we dig in really to the meat.
Thank you. Yes, I did. My friend and yours, Josh Wigler, who writes for The Hollywood Reporter, just launched a new Lost podcast himself. And Josh actually let us know, you know, when we launched this podcast, he messaged me and was like, "Ack, I'm launching one too." But there's plenty of room for many a Lost podcast. Josh's podcast, which is called Lost Down the Hatch, which he's co-hosting with Mike Bloom over on the Post Show Recaps Network. That is a completely spoiler-filled podcast. So they're just going wall-to-wall spoilers.
I had it backwards. All right, good.
So if you want all the spoilers, all the spoiler talk, you might want to check out Lost Down the Hatch on the Post Show Recaps Network. They are some very smart, thoughtful dudes who know a lot about TV and know a lot about Lost. So you might want to give it a listen.
Excellent. They have the spoilers, and we are going to spare you from them. Neil, for our calm section, what happened this week on the island?
Well, Dave, in this week's episode, Outlaws, episode 16 of Lost, is direct.
Actually, wait, hold on.
What?
Neil, Joanna, what is our timer at?
Oh, we got time. We got like 51
okay,
seconds.
Good. All right, good, good.
Okay. Neil, all right. Directed by Jack Bender, written by Drew Goddard, first Drew Goddard episode of Lost. This aired February 16th of 2005. It takes place on days 29 through 31 on the island. In flashback, we see what happened to Sawyer's mother and father, which is very sad. We join Sawyer later in his life as he and Robert Patrick track down the man who ruined Sawyer's life, or so we think. Sawyer has a drink with Jack's dad in Australia. Jack's dad basically talks Sawyer into killing a guy, and then plot twist, it wasn't the right guy. Crazy stuff. Sawyer, he's just emotional wreck. Anyway, on the island, Sawyer goes to war with a boar. He also hears whispers. He also goes flirt hunting with Kate. And it leads them to playing I Never and spilling a bunch of jungle tea.
That's the timer sound.
Okay, does that mean we have to stop?
No, you can continue and then we'll play.
Okay. Locke also stops by and spills some very personal shit about his sister Jeannie dying and like reincarnated as a dog coming back and like comforting his mother. There's just like a lot from Locke. Hurley tries to help out Charlie by setting him up with a therapy date with Saeed, and they do a little therapy about killing, which I guess works because Charlie later feels better and goes on a walk with Claire. It all ends with Sawyer realizing that he met Jack's father and then totally not telling him, which is a whole nother thing. Fun fact, this is relates to Jack and Sawyer's conversation at the end. By the time this episode aired, the Boston Red Sox had actually won a World Series in 2004, in October 2004. But it's worth noting that in the show's timeline, this is what, day 30 and 31, they landed on 8-15-04. So we're, what, mid-September? So it hasn't actually happened in island time.
Not that they would know, because they're on an island.
Not that they would know. Which leads me to this week's, I have actually two opening questions, and this.
Wait. I think before your opening questions, we should play.
Okay. Let's play the drinking game and then we'll do my opening questions.
Yes. So let's just do one round. Who wants to go first is the question.
I will.
All right, Dave.
Okay.
Oh, wait. No, wait. I have to come up with the question?
Yeah, you have to come up with
it. When this was pitched to me, you were like, we'll have six. One will be in the storm. So I figured you would have these questions. All right.
What's the thing that you've, I don't know.
Never, I mean, I can go first.
Never have I ever. No, you should go first, Joanna.
Never have I ever discovered that I was covered in blood and didn't know the source of it.
That happens to me like all the time. You didn't even leave.
Wait.
You left out knees to nips, which is the key to that story.
Do you
knees
drink? To nips. Do I drink if I've done it or if I haven't done it?
No, I drink because it's happened to me.
Cheers, Nadir.
Sweet. All right. I'll try to go next in 10 minutes.
All right. I'm resetting the alarm. All right.
Excellent.
Neil, hit us with some burning questions.
All right. Two big burning questions to start off. First question, serious question. Is this the first instance of the flashback storyline being a better storyline than the island storyline? Because I have a theory that maybe this is the first time where the flashbacks are even better. Secondary question, which is a crazy tinfoil hat island theory town, which is, do you think that the ghost of Jack's father was also the boar?
No. Well, we're going to talk more about the boar and the storm, I think. But I don't think it's, whatever it might be, I don't think it, if it's a ghost, I would say that I think, if it's a ghost, I think it's Frank, the shrimp truck guy.
Okay, so it could be Frank. Because yeah. People are seeing dead people on the island at this point.
Well, and so. He hears, in the whispers, he hears, like, it'll come back around, or whatever it is that Frank says when he dies. Mm-hmm. He hears, Sawyer hears that on the island. So, like, he thinks it's Frank.
Okay, that's fair.
So
I think that's a fair assumption.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then to your first question, I would say maybe this isn't the best. It might be, you're right, but I would say it's the best at interweaving.
Yes.
With the actual island story, both because what we're learning about more about Sawyer, but because of that scene at the end with Jack, where he really like hooks the island story into our flashbacks in a way that not only brings those two people together off island, but on island. And him not telling him, although it's one of my least favorite tropes in all of television, is a very thrilling moment to end this episode that already had a murder in it at that point. We get, I think, an even more emotionally thrilling moment. So maybe yes, maybe yes.
It'll come back around.
My only other candidate was the other Jack's father episode, I think, where I was like, as I'm watching the episode, I'm like, I'm more into the flashback than I am in what's happening on the island. And this felt, I felt I had a very strong feeling of that this time.
Yeah, I think, even though we've been talking during this first season about when Lost goes to stereotype, and that I wasn't sure we were 100% there with the last Sawyer episode because so much of the pathos was contained in monologue, there is the beginning of this episode, which I think roots you so squarely in how terrifying that experience was, that returning to it, even the smallest bit, puts me squarely on Sawyer's side, even when I'm 100% sure when he's buying that gun that he is going to shoot the wrong person. Just because, like, a certain degree of television writing means that that's probably not our guy, in the sense that...
Yeah, it's too easy for season one.
Yeah, we get told with by, like, a slick Robert Patrick with, like, no backed-up information, just, like, some hearsay. But Soyo, he goes up to this shrimp thing and he looks like he's having a hard time with his own moral center. But then when he comes out in the rain, I'm like, this guy's dead. It's going to happen. Yeah, I really like how this storyline doesn't necessarily go the non-stereotypical route. If you do a lot of, you know, moneylender light mob stories in your spare time. But I do think this one has the emotional anchor with that opening flashback, to make Sawyer sympathetic both to us in the flashback and I think more on the island, since he has been, you know, flirting with how much he wants people to interact with him in the past couple of episodes.
This is a much more human character than the guy who's like, I'm gonna lie about whether or not I have someone's inhaler just to make sure everyone hates me. I mean, like, they
I'm gonna steal a diary just so I have it.
Yeah, they visit those themes in this episode, right? Because like Jack mentions like that idea, sort of like you want people to hate you or you think you're destined to have people hate you or whatever, just like my father or something like that. But that's more natural, like the way he behaves, Sawyer behaves in this episode is more identifiably human to me than like the early version of him. And, you know, that's all part of them trying to peel back the onion on these characters. Like we get sort of these inhumane versions before we peel back the onion and get like the more human core of them. But I like where we are on the Sawyer trajectory in this episode, because it's not like Charlie. It's not like, the arc is not complete because he like still at the end of the episode doesn't tell Jack, you know, if Sawyer were like, everything's fixed and I have healed my, you know, flashback wounds, then he would have been like, hey, Doc, guess what? I met your dad in a bar, you know, like, but he's not there yet. And so with one hand, he gives the gun back. And with the other hand, he withholds his information. And so he's just like, he's on the path, but not done with his journey. And that's a great place to be for a character like Sawyer. So
I don't want to step too much on the Hunkapalooza we have coming up. But did you guys come to a solution as to why Kate feels like she needs to take this side adventure upon herself? Because she does approach Jack, and as soon as she hears there's one gun out there, is pretty proactive about she's the person who could get this out of Sawyer. Is it attraction? Is it her just taking more responsibility for the island governance, since she's by far one of the more responsible people there?
We didn't talk about Kate's motivation. We talked about her arms. We just objectified her, but, I'm just kidding. But,
that is the place for it.
But I will say that I think when they play Never Have I Ever or I Never, that Sawyer has her number. He knows that she's after, I think he can tell that she's after the gun. Like when she's like, I want carte blanche to anything, you know, like he knows it's the gun, right? I feel like Sawyer always knows what Kate's up to and likes her anyway. And that's why I like the Sawyer Kate dynamic so much, because like Jack knows when Kate's lying and he gets mad about it, and Sawyer knows when Kate's lying and he thinks it's hilarious. And so I think when he's like,
he's kind of into it.
Yeah, he's super into it. So when he's like, I never asked for carte blanche just so I could spend time on the island with the only other person who understands me, like, I think he's kind of right. Like, she just wants to be around Sawyer and have an excuse to do that because he's very handsome and fun. So
I also think there is an element of like the whole, we always talk about the survivor game, because Jack does make that offhand comment to her where he's like, I don't want you to owe him any, or I don't want you to owe him anything. But I think Kate is also playing the game, you know, like she's like, I can make an easy ally out of Sawyer if I help him, you know, deal with some of his issues. So, you know, I think she's smart.
In terms of playing the survivor game, that's a really smart move by Kate, because she's like, both these idiots just think that I'm attractive. Like, if I want to have some other motivation, Jack's like, even later on when he's talking to Sawyer, he's like, what'd she give you? I just want to be up in everybody's business. So, yeah, if it's a power play by Kate.
Well, yeah. And you know, Kate's whole thing is like, she's okay being in this situation, but eventually she's going to need to make a move of some kind. In a very Kate way. So she needs to keep allies for when it's time for the Kate move.
Do you think when the boar wrecks their camp after they've Never Have I Ever, and Locke shows up and Locke tells the ghost dog story.
Such a good Locke scene.
It is such a good Locke scene for a lot of reasons. Like, he's like making coffee and he stops in the middle of the trauma to be like, oh yeah, that's good cup. It's real good. Yeah. But then at the end, Kate has this little smile when she realizes that Locke has somehow said the exact right thing. Do you think that's like a game recognized game little smile?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I like it.
It could be.
Does admitting that mean that she's too much Team Locke at that point for you?
No, what I like about this episode, one of the many, this is like a fan freaking tastic episode of Lost. What a great episode of Lost this is. One thing starting at the very top that I love about it is that it's called Outlaws. And it's called Outlaws plural because Kate is also an outlaw, right?
Mm-hmm.
So here are two outlaws. And so like the scene where they play I Never is an incredibly good scene of, and one of our listeners actually in our Patreon Slack, if you're in our Slack and a Patreon subscriber, you can discuss the episode with other listeners. She pointed out the mirror between the way that Sawyer finds out Kate kills a man and the way that Jack finds out that Kate killed a man. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like that Jack had to like bully it out of her and she's crying and screaming, and with Sawyer
part charms of this, like, her out of it.
It's like a flirty fun game that they're, I mean, it gets serious, but it's like, and then that kind of like that when he says never have I never killed a man and she drinks and then he drinks, it's like this like moment, you know, it's so good.
Well, when that moment happens, you're like, oh, that's why they're playing I Never, because it's not like
it's not the only scene. Reason the timer just went off.
Speaking of,
perfect timing.
Never have I ever fallen asleep while driving.
Wow. Okay. I see.
Yeah, that's how we're going to play this game.
All right. I'm drinking.
If you start with knees to nips, we're going to go straight into it.
Oh, I've never done that.
I set the timer again. Neil, it is your turn next time.
Oh.
I just, in terms of, so Lost, looking back on Lost 15 years later, having seen a lot of television, and especially how a lot of television adapted parts of Lost that became new TV, like extreme serialization, like the mysteries or whatnot, it is very interesting when little tropes pop up, which are essentially sitcom tropes, which is have two characters have play a drinking game, get recontextualized in this island context. And I'm not saying that it isn't done very well and isn't done for multiple reasons, but when that I Didn't Kill a Man, when he drinks for the second time and you realize that the language of the entire scene has not only been about these two characters, but also included the mechanics of the game to build to like this crescendo moment. It's just a very good example of, who was it? Drew Goddard, mm-hmm. who wrote this episode. Yes. Drew Goddard taking a trope and massaging it in, and it fits perfectly and it works well and it's great. But you could take two characters, play a drinking game to get to know each other, and throw it as a note card into any story.
Yeah.
And it would basically work.
Yeah, well, it depends on the execution, but yes, you're right. It's a very good trope to use. And yeah, this is Drew Goddard's first episode that he wrote for Lost, and he wouldn't write another one until season 3. And, Drew Goddard, who also wrote, like, Cabin in the Woods and, worked on
the first,
Buffy,
like, half of Netflix, and, Netflix's Daredevil.
Yeah. Great guy, Drew Goddard. And this is an extremely good example of what he does very well. You see, so, I mean, they play a drinking game in Cabin in the Woods. So there you go, to your point.
Yep. No, good trope.
To your point. That piece of trivia that I want to drop.
Yeah.
Actually, nope, that belongs in the storm. Gonna move that over to my storm section.
I'm gonna keep following the thing. In terms of like tropes, we have to go back, I feel, to Ghost Dog. Because
Ghost Boar? Ghost Pig?
No, the dog. Because Locke shows up with the perfect story. The perfect story to alleviate Sawyer's specific moment of crisis. First question, did it happen at all? I feel like yes, but there's also, I feel like, room if it didn't, that you want to make that argument. But the second more important question, at what point does Locke make a read of this entire situation accurately enough to come up with, his sister dying by falling off the monkey bars and then a dog coming to live with his family for the exact period of time his mother was still alive so she could forgive herself? Let's start with Neil.
Foster mother, yeah.
Foster mother.
Neil?
No idea.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Locke has mental journals, dossiers on every single person on this island. So he's always watching and he's always listening. And who knows how long he was listening before he rolled up with his coffee. I don't know. And his cover
story. It's really hard not to read Locke as very earnest at all times. Like, I really believe that story. For some weird reason.
Oh, I definitely
believe just
because
the way
story.
He
yeah.
tells it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't believe for a second that he would, like, make that up, you know, have any, like, political purpose or anything. It's just, like, he's just so earnest in these early morning hours.
I mean, I think there are ways in which Locke does want to use various pieces of island therapy to heal his fellow castaways. So, like, with Boone, the goop thing was, like, transgressive, but it also was, like, for a greater good in theory, which was to, like, shake Boone of his Shannon, you know, fixation. And, you know, here with Sawyer, like, he's helping Sawyer.
Yeah, I think Locke's, the most cynical motivation I can come up with for Locke in this is he just wants everybody to be calm.
Yeah.
Because he's got some stuff going on that he's trying to figure out on the island, and he doesn't need anyone panicking and throwing off his plans. So I think it's just more like, let me tell you this story from my life so that you'll chill the hell out, guy who still has a gun.
Yeah, but it's a well-written and well-performed monologue, especially in the way that he's like, you know, my mom thought the dog was, you know, my sister, which of course would be silly. and just like being able to counter every way that you would say, like, this is a story that's just putting me on, stopping to talk about how delicious the coffee was in the middle of being like, my sister fell off the monkey bars and died. Just very well pitched, very mysterious. And when he does that big creepy smile at the end, isn't part of you waiting for him to reveal the orange peel? I certainly was.
I feel like he, I feel like it's not a spoiler to say that when, I think it's Kate says, like, are you saying the dog was your sister? And he goes, no, Kate, that would be silly. I feel like we hear Locke do a version of that again and again. No, that would be silly.
That would be ridiculous. Oh, I was in a wheelchair before we got to the island. No, don't be silly.
That'd be ridiculous.
That'd be ridiculous. I do want to make sure to underline the point. I think I said it, but I just want to make sure that people know, because I didn't notice even these last two times I watched the episode, which is that in the whisper, like, when Sawyer wakes up and the boar has like ravaged his tent, and then also in the whispers that he hears in the jungle, is the line, it'll come back around, which is the guy he killed's final words, right? So like, that's something that I don't know how closely you have to be listening to hear it, but it's in
the
there.
Subtitles.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
I was
in
watching
there.
It with subtitles on before we started recording.
And then we should, you know, for our first timers, like, this is a big moment in terms of the spooky whispers, because when...
Well, it would have been, except he's keeping it to himself, but I guess Saeed would know. Saeed's smart.
No. I mean, for our listeners, it's a big moment because, like, for people who are watching Lost the first time, because when Saeed heard the whispers, he was like woozy and drugged out, as he says in this episode. But like to hear them again from someone who's not like woozy and drugged out and concussed or whatever, feels like, you know, information.
They're lowering the bar for who can hear the whispers.
Yeah, the whispers.
So initially
like a confirmation of that the whispers are a thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, initially it was like the French woman, but she's off. She's gone. And then it was Saeed, but he was injured. Now it's Sawyer, but he was stressed out a little bit. So, like, we still aren't 100% sure what's going on, but there's now a clarity to the whispers. Like, the whispers are saying things that we can understand.
Yeah, like,
that's what I was going to say, is that the difference, or the elevation for me, and why I got so mad that Sawyer didn't tell Saeed, is that this time that we could actually tell what something was saying, and it was a human. Like, it was... English language was whispered, which I think is an elevation above the, you know, are there others? Oh, wow, there's some weird, spooky, whispering-like sounds to, like, something saying something, and they're saying something that's important to me.
This is also the episode where we find out that Sawyer's real name is James. So
that is true.
I was thinking of it as the, like... I'm sorry that my brain is broken and I think in GIFs, but, like, I was thinking of... like if Sawyer is our Jaime Lannister of the island, right? Like, you know, and like Sawyer is his Kingslayer name, then like James is his like Jaime, my name is Jaime sort of thing. You know what I mean? Like that's who he really is. I mean, the question of killing Sawyer, which is, and we'll talk about this idea more in the storm as well, but like the question of like, he's trying to kill Sawyer and he kills the wrong man, but like, doesn't he also need to, like, kill the Sawyer that he is to, like, let the James be born sort of thing? Like,
maybe.
That
feels more advanced than where he's at.
Yeah.
I think this episode, at least, about him, like, realizing that, like, his drive, I think it was, like, his drive to get revenge against Sawyer is what caused him to make the mistake last time. So that's why he backs off the boar at the end, because it's like he realizes that his rage is, when his rage is guiding him, he makes mistakes or
I'm gonna push back on this. I'm gonna say like, so he's put on this guise of Sawyer, right? He's adopted the name of the guy who ruined his family. And this guy is a bad dude, Sawyer. And, so he's trying to be a bad, he's trying to like have the swagger posture of a bad dude. And we've seen him once before in Confidence Man, like sort of fail to execute on that when he couldn't, when he saw that little boy and he's like, can't go through with the con. Sorry. And in this episode, the question comes up twice, I believe it is, of like, I think Robert Patrick's character, Hibbs, and, the guy who sells him the gun are both like, you're not the killing kind. So Sawyer's big question in this episode is like, am I the kind of guy who can kill? Am I a Sawyer? Am I a bad enough dude that I can kill someone? And then he does.
I want to pick up, but
he does kill someone. And then when he doesn't kill the boar, that's him being like, no, I'm not that guy. That's what I read it as. Like, he doesn't kill the boar. If the boar is Frank, if the boar is the guy that he killed, the shrimp shack shooter, then like, you know, then he decides not to be a killer this time around. Right?
Right. That's the growth.
Yeah. So that's him like,
baby steps though.
That's him trying to kill the Sawyer in him.
That's where I want to pick up after our next.
Never have I ever.
Never have
All
I
right,
ever.
Neil.
Okay, so I have to ask. I say it now.
Uh huh.
Yep.
Okay. Never have I ever hunted and killed a living thing.
Oh, have I? Wait.
I have to drink. I have to drink for this one, right? Because I did it.
Oh, so yeah, you're very bad at this game. Yes. The point is to try to make other people drink. But
I have not had an opportunity to drink yet.
That's true. Have a sip of your beer.
But I'm so counting. I am counting fishing. That's the most.
Oh,
I've ever
okay.
Done.
That was going to be my first question.
I've fished before. Sure.
Yeah. If you've fished, you've hunted and killed another living organism.
Yep. I sure have.
I was going to say, I've done some killing of things that were just, it was time for them to be killed, but that doesn't involve any hunting.
Like grass spiders in your bathroom.
Yeah, things like that, you know, things that we're going to use for meat later. Anyway.
What the fuck?
Not important.
Okay.
I knew this would yield results.
All right, it's going to be Dave's turn next time. Yes, Dave.
No, it's going to be your turn again next time.
Why?
Oh, we're bouncing? We're ping-ponging?
No, we're circulating. No,
yeah,
you're right. It's my turn. Okay.
I think the Sawyer inside of him is the romance con, specifically, because that's what we see him doing at the beginning of this. Yes, this episode's thing is about conquering whether or not he's going to be a killer, but the more screwed-up thing about him having to conquer the Sawyer is there's this pull in between them where that might mean that he doesn't deserve love. Because he's just like naturally smooth. And so when he is hitting on Kate, is he, you know, like pulling a series of moves? Does he actually like her? I don't necessarily know that Sawyer knows at this point because he's just the con man that pulls this one specific love con as far as we know at this point. So I think, yes, he needs to kill off the Sawyer within him, but that's going to come like way after.
But we're not sure he's given up the game.
Exactly. Okay. I don't think he's sure he's given up the game. I think that's like really tough for him.
Yeah, and I mean,
he seems so resigned to it at the end of his first flashback episode. That's like, this is who I am. Like, run away, Freckles. That like, yeah, I think he definitely
and
wants
he also
to.
And he also run away, Freckles. I think it's both. Like, I think it's both. I think what you say does not negate what I say. That's what I think.
Fair.
I also think that, and this is part of the way this episode ends, which is like he realizes that his competition is with Jack over Kate. Like that Sawyer plays that game without even thinking about it, you know? So I don't know if that's necessarily the reason why he didn't tell Jack that information, but he does like having a rivalry with Jack.
Yeah, that's already been true. Maybe it's like right. More specifically about Kate now, but he's been like sort of seeing Jack as his most like rival alpha male on the island. Seems like something that's been going on, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or sort of like degrees that he's willing to accept help. Like he's willing to accept a story from Locke and he's willing to accept some quid pro quo from Kate to the extent that he's gonna give up the gun. So he's like opened his door a crack to actual having relationships with people and not having to keep stuff in his tent. Hopefully.
So
we'll see.
So a couple things additionally that I want to say. The idea that as you say, Sawyer being able to accept help. That's a big thesis of this episode and of this series. And Saeed gets to say it, to Charlie. He says, you're not alone. Don't pretend that you are. And that is, such a huge message of Lost, right? Live together, die alone sort of thing. But like, furthermore, you're not alone. Don't pretend you are. Like, every character, I think, could stand to learn that lesson. And, this is something that Sawyer is learning by inches in this episode when he, cause it's not just his connection to Kate. Which is deepened in this episode by their little drinking game. It's a connection to Jack, actually, because he meets Jack's bad dad. And so, like, even though he doesn't talk to Jack about that fact, like, learning that that guy in the bar that he met was Jack's, and I love that scene so much with Christian Shepherd, but like, learning that that guy is Jack's dad gives him a connection to Jack that he may have previously, you know, denied existed, that he had nothing in common. Like, I'm sure he would assume that Jack, who he resents for being like rich and educated and stuff like that, I bet he was like, oh, I bet you had like a, you know, a great life raised by, you know, really cool, you know, guy who loved you and stuff like that. Now he knows. And so that's just all part of being folded into the community more and more, which is something he resisted so hard in the first few episodes.
Yes, let's use that as a jumping off point to talk about Charlie, Claire, and Saeed in this episode. Okay. Neil, I had one cinematography thought.
Mm.
They're burying Ethan. Hurley and Charlie are burying Ethan.
The hand?
And that, well, not just the hand. the hand is weird, and then there's a time where it looks like he's breathing.
There is, yeah.
From the internet, it was like wind. But specifically, from having been on television production, there's one low-angle shot with the hand in the foreground and Hurley and Charlie digging in the middle ground, and the background is just the slightest amount of pink sunshine. And from the bottom left of frame is splashed pure white light, like you get from a high-wattage light bulb in like a $9 Home Depot clipping light. And I know that last shot we're losing the light reframing that never comes up again in the shot, and the color never matches. But if you go through and you watch that sequence, that was the last shot of that day, I guarantee you, and they did not have enough light to pull off that mid-ground. I don't even know if the foreground stuff is even there or if it's lit and then added in separately, but super noticeable in an otherwise immaculately shot episode of like sweat beads and mud clumps on people's skin.
Yes. The it sticks out because it's like somebody turned on a flashlight for like 10 seconds. But I do love that shot. I love the framing of like the sort of rawness of Ethan's cold, dead hand sticking out of the one of the many tarps on the island. And, you know, this idea that like Hurley is just trying to like help his buddy through this horrendous thing. And it's just such a sweet moment, but also made incredibly weird by the dead body. So yeah, I'm a big fan of this whole storyline because I don't know if it feels sort of compact and on its own. Like it is part of Charlie's, you know, wrapping up Charlie's whole killing Ethan thing. But I kind of love the shots, the panning shots at the end of everyone else on the island is busy with something. You know, like we get this sense while we're following Kate and Sawyer, while they go to war with the boar, that like everyone else on the island is like being very productive. So then,
well, the raft is under construction.
Sun and Jin are there.
Isn't it crazy that the raft is like almost done and we haven't, this is the first we're seeing of it?
Michael used to work in construction, so he knows how to motivate people.
Exactly. He did like five drawings of it before.
Yeah, he also
started.
Used to be an artist, so the first draft of his drawing was like perfect.
The raft is zero to nearly complete. I am, hats off to you, Michael.
And really excellent craftsmanship.
Walt's magnetizing all the nails.
Walt got a flock of birds to carry all the supplies to them, Cinderella style. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have Charlie overcoming PTSD and going on a walk after talking to Saeed about post-traumatic stress disorder. I like Joanna's reading, and you're definitely correct about the not alone, don't act like it. But the first time that's said in the episode, my thought is like, yeah, a lot of people on this island have killed somebody.
Yeah, we talked about this before, I think. I can't remember if it was in the calm or the storm, but it's just sort of like when you talk about people who've killed people, Kate's killed, you know, someone, I think it was an argument I got in with our listeners. Sorry, but like someone was like, in the last week's episode when they were like, Kate, it was right for Kate to not want to give, it was right for Jack to not want to give Kate a gun. Kate killed a man. And I'm like, Saeed's killed lots of people. Like, yeah. Just FYI. And I think Jack probably knows that. Anyway.
Jack's killed a person on the island already.
So, you know, well, mercy killed, right?
Mm-hmm. But it does, it also, yeah. I like the Saeed the Saeed and Charlie thing works really well because it also, it parallels what we were talking about earlier with now Jack and Sawyer, that they have something that they, well, at least Sawyer knows that they share. So now Charlie and Saeed, they share this thing. They both
killed a man. Sorry,
either four or six times in the chest.
I have a couple questions about that, which is this, it'll come back around idea, that we get from Frank. The shrimp in Shrek, cook.
Also shout out to our Australian listeners. We know that they call them prawns in Australia.
They do not call them shrimp. I have shrimp truck trivia, which
I love it.
That is a shrimp truck, the alarm's about to go off. Okay. Sure. Never have I ever played football.
Oh, damn it.
Oh, I got that one. I can drink.
I'm drinking.
I drink if I did it, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, your turn next, Dave. All right. That's a shrimp truck on the North Shore in Kahuku. In Kahuku, on the North Shore of Oahu, there's a whole bunch of shrimp trucks. That one's called, I think it's called Fumi's, actually. Not like Mackie's or whatever they rename it. I think that's called Fumi's, but if you're going to the North Shore to get shrimp, I have two tips for you. One, go to Giovanni's shrimp truck. It's better. Two, if you go to Giovanni's, don't go to the one in Kahuku. It's too crowded. Go to the one in Haleiwa, which is about down by Waimea Bay. That one is the same shrimp, way less crowded. You'll just have to like kick some chickens away, but otherwise you'll have a great time. And between Kahuku and Haleiwa on the North Shore is Kualoa Ranch, which is where the, golf course is, where they filmed Jurassic Park, et cetera, et cetera. So, go to the North Shore of Oahu. It's a beautiful place to be, and there's delicious shrimp to eat. If you were going to Australia, you would not have shrimp. You would have prawns. So there you go.
Nice.
That's all my shrimp track trivia. Also, thank you so much for laughing at that thing you do joke. I really, really appreciate both of you for that. So this idea of like how much suffering is enough, like how it'll come back around, like how much are they being tormented, whether metaphysically or just emotionally on this island.
Karmically.
Yeah, karmically on this island by what they've done in their past. And it also ties into this idea, this Christian Shepherd idea of it's fate. Some people are just supposed to suffer, right?
Does it tie into it or is that a opposite?
Well, that's the
Around is like a balance.
Well, that's the is it fate? Is it, well, maybe that's karmic versus fate. But like, I think these are various ideas that the show is interacting with, right? Like how much.
Oh, definitely.
How
I just much think of it's yours, like one is like,
yeah,
Christian Shepherd's like, I can do the bad things because I'm meant to suffer.
Right.
So okay. That's like on me. No matter what I do, I'm meant to suffer. So I might as well take it upon me to do the bad things.
Yeah.
Whereas it'll come back around is like, it's not your fault. I don't need to be mad at you. Life's going to have its way with you because you did this thing.
Okay. I feel that. The idea that the idea that they're all working through something, working through things they did in the past and how that informs their experience on the island. And this idea of the clean slate. Well, something that I've been thinking a lot about is like this idea of the clean slate, right? The tabula rasa that we've been talking about since Kate's episode called Tabula Rasa. This idea that you can come to the island and you could be a new person, a new you. No one knows your history. You could be a new you. But you cannot be a new you if you're haunted by ghosts, right? Ghosts get in the way of you being a new you. And that's what this boar does, right? Is it's like intruding a past experience on Sawyer's attempt to like strike out a new existence. You know what I mean? Like, does that make any sense? Have I been?
Well, yeah. Well, and this is something the show does often, and it's like them finding the case in whatever the case may be is another mm-hmm. example of it, where it's like, you know, now Kate has to deal with this horrible thing from her past that is there. So there are ways that the show uses things on the island, other people to, you know, mess with their growth, personal growth.
Yeah, and I think we did discuss this on another episode. It's like if you came in pairs, Kate kind of came in a pair with the Marshall. But if you come in a pair, you don't get to have that blank slate, right? Because you're carrying your ghost with you, Jin and Sun or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, Vincent's like, oh. Got so much baggage from my life back home.
Vince is like, I can tell you stories about Walt. You want to hear stories about Walt? That boy.
I'd be running free on this island. I would be on the other side of this island if I didn't have these people that keep thinking I need to be near them all the time.
He's like, every once in a while, I'd be walking down the hall and Walt would make me from across the room, just like make me hit the wall real quick and then let me go with his mind powers.
With his mind, just I would sense magnetic north and run as fast as I could. Boom, right into a wall. They're all cruel. Joanna, before we talk more hunks, what's the most 2004 thing for this episode?
One last thing before I get to that I want to say. Promise the last thing, which is that the episode ends with this, or towards the end of the episode, we get this Sawyer Jack scene, right? And we have Sawyer handing the gun over. Which in a different version of the script, like there was a scene where Kate's like, cool, cashing in my blank check. I get the, I get the gun. Give the gun to Jack, you know? So like we see that connective tissue, but we don't need it. And I like that it's not there. He gives the gun to Jack and he calls him sheriff, which is not the first thing he's called. I think he's called both Saeed and Kate sheriff at one point too. But it's like if the episode's called Outlaws, this is him like recognizing or grudgingly recognizing the lawful hierarchy of the island, right? He's like, here you go, sheriff. Like, here's the gun. I'm handing the gun over to you sort of thing. It's like he's falling in line in a certain way of the rules of this society, the laws of this society, which is that Jack, I guess, is King Gun. I guess it's the guy who has them.
Jack is in charge of weapons.
The most 2004 thing, we don't even have a poll this week, guys, I'm afraid to say. The most 2004 thing of this episode just simply has to be the line about, and that's why the Red Sox will never win the World Series. Because only 2004 was the last time you could say that.
This is the first episode of their second half pickup.
Yeah.
So at this point when it aired, they knew. They're like, fuck. Well, too integral to the story to change at this point. Can't make it another weird baseball team or another weird sports curse.
I don't think they needed to have worried about that. Like, I don't know when they wrote the back nine. Like this is the back nine of the season. And I don't know when they wrote this relative to the rest, because they might not have had this World Series comment in there, but the World Series comment in there is good because we haven't heard it already. This is the first time we've heard it. They could have changed it to something else entirely, but keeping it in keeps that eeriness of, people being stuck in time. Right.
Yeah. And it's one of those things
future question for somebody, I think. Oh, good.
It's one of those things that I remember being like a thing when it aired, because this aired in like February of 2015. So this was like four or five months after the whole, and the Red Sox thing was wild because they were down 3-0 to the Yankees. They came all the way back. They won and they went on to win the World Series. So it was like this crazy thing. And so I do remember, like, when Jack mentions it, it's like a weird moment that sort of throws you back into, oh, right, they've only been here a month. Like, you know, like, so that in the world of Jack, even if they had the news, this still would not have happened, which is wild.
Oh, Red Sox. Who knew you were going to be important to rewatching the ABC series last? All right. And then without any further ado, let's hunk out.
So this is another Sawyer episode, which means, of course, we have to bring back our expert in Sawyerology, Kristen Russo. Hello, Kristen.
Hello.
So we are here to talk about the episode Outlaws. Kristen very graciously stepped in sort of last minute to appear as our original guest canceled, but it was sort of weirdly serendipitous timing, like creepy, like ghost boar on an island, creepy coincidence, right? Because Kristen and I are just like a few days away from the end of a Kickstarter that we're doing for A New My So-Called Life podcast rewatch project that we're doing called the Boiler Room Cast. You can go to boilerroomcast.com to find out more information on that. And coincidentally, an actor in this episode, Jeff Perry, Frank, the poor shrimp truck victim himself, is one of my favorite performers from My So-Called Life, to be honest with you. He plays Mr. Katimsky. Believe I got that correct.
Yeah, Mr. Katimsky, you did.
The drama teacher. I always think whenever, like, Jeff Perry has showed up in a lot of things. He played Cyrus Bean on Scandal. He was on Grey's Anatomy. He was like an original founder of the Steppenwolf Theater Company in Chicago. But
oh my God.
I know. But I, like, with Gary Sinise and, like, you know, he's like,
holy shit.
Yeah, he's a real heavy hitter. But I always think of him as Angela's drama teacher. In My So-Called Life. So, do you want to, like, for our listeners who, I swear we're going to talk about Lost as well, but we just wanted to talk about My So-Called Life very briefly before we get into that. Do you want to tell them, like, sort of what we're up to and what's going on with that project for us?
I do. Of course. So 10 years before the plane crashed, in Pittsburgh, you know, came My So-Called Life. And so Joanna and I are doing a format that you're probably familiar with, whether you're familiar from listening to The Storm or from Buffering the Vampire Slayer or any of the rewatch podcasts that we've been involved in, where we're going to talk about this series an episode at a time. And it's my heart show, which is a different thing. And we talk about it a little bit in the first episode, how it's a switch for me and Joanna, where I grew up with this in my DNA. And Joanna, this is just your second time through the series, right?
I think so. Like, maybe I've seen like an episode here or there repeatedly, but I'm very much the novice this time around.
Yeah. And so, in addition to doing the podcast, which is going to be a limited run, right? Because the show was only on for one season. It's 19 episodes, 19 beautifully perfect episodes. And so we're kickstarting it both to support the work that we're going to do in making the podcast, but also to sort of create a little community to mirror some of the stuff that we do, at Buffering and also that you all do over here at The Storm. We're going to be doing some My So-Called Life live watches, doing bonus episodes. I'm doing a special thing where you can donate a GSA talk. I do a lot of work with LGBTQ communities. So there are a lot of really fun perks over there. You can also advertise on the podcast through the Kickstarter. So there's a lot of fun stuff, and it's basically this like limited time to get in that community as opposed to how we do it in our respective podcasts on Patreon. Right. So this is like, if you want to join us, do it before the end of the day on Friday, because then we won't be able to join those things any longer. And yeah, you can find it at boilerroomcast.com. And see the cute little trailer video that we made, which I'm very proud of.
It's a great trailer. And also, yeah, you want to be in on those live watches where, so you can hear me go, oh my God. And also, I was telling Kristen, you know, on this podcast, we do, you know, the most 2004 thing about the episode, but like, being back in the 90s, boy. I was telling Chris the other day, I almost bought a pair of red velvet Doc Martens online. Like, I was very close to doing that, inspired just by looking at Claire Danes on the show. So.
Yeah. Oh, and like, if you get to the end of the storm and you're like, I need more Joanna in my ears, and that girl Kristen seemed pretty cool too. The pilot episode is up for our backers right now.
Right.
Today.
Now.
Right now. Wow. And it will not be live until next week. So you can get in on that early as well. And I have to say, it's a pretty great first episode. I'm pretty excited about it.
All right. So last thing we will say is you go to boilerroomcast.com, get in on all of that. And that brings us back to Lost.
Here we are. Here we are.
All right. Oh. So I had to figure out something else for us to talk about this time, since I think we really like nailed it on the problematic fave subject last time.
Yeah, super excited that you asked me to come back for the one where Sawyer fights with the boar the whole time.
Yeah? Are you being sarcastic? I think it's a great episode. Did you not like
it? No, it is. It is. I was just like, oh my God, remember this episode?
It's very good. But I actually, so we'll talk about Sawyer a bit, obviously. But I actually want to start by asking you about another character in this episode.
Ooh.
Which is Kate Austin. And something that, maybe you can lend your expertise to this, possibly. I've been told that Kate is a bit of like a lesbian icon, even though she's like, you know, obviously like a hetero lead. Is this something like you're aware of, or something that like, seems appropriate to you, or like, how do you feel about this?
Well, as a notable queer, I can tell you that from the year, so this show was on 2004 for how many years?
Seven seasons.
So I can tell you that for the entirety of this series, I was head over heels in love with Kate Austin. And I was not alone in my love for Kate. I think that like Kate is, you know, she's like the, we call it hard femme over here in the queer community. she's like femme with an edge, right? She can like track a fucking boar. She's got great arm muscles. She's really tough, but she's also got like that feminine edge. So I think for those reasons and more, at least speaking from my corner of the queer universe, yeah, a lot of us were pretty into Kate.
I love this. I am, as your resident straight person, I am learning the phrase hard femme for the first time right now. Sorry, real quick correction to myself. There are only six seasons of Lost. We wish there were seven.
Seven seasons of Buffy, six of Lost.
There you go.
It's hard to keep them all straight.
There it is. As we're trying to watch this show through the lens of 2019, right? There are like basically no gay people on this island. And
statistics would say otherwise. Yes.
And at least in these like losties that we have here on this beach. And like thinking back to a time in the culture when you had to like find your gay icons where you could amongst the straight women who do nothing but flirt with men, like
I mean, I think, you know, I think that that's still part of like queer culture, right? Is to like watch a thing and be like, yeah, I know they're straight, but right. Obviously everybody is not everybody, but I think we both are intimately familiar with like fan fiction and things like that. And I think that that started in a place where, right, in 2004 and 1994, like there were not a lot of queer characters to be like, I see myself there. So instead, you know, we created our own narratives, whether in our minds or on paper or what have you. But I do think that that still is a thing. I mean, I know it is for me, and maybe it's because I'm of that era. So it's just second nature for me to be like, yeah, what would it be like if this character were gay? Or obviously this character is gay, even though they're flirting with dudes.
Right.
So, you know, I do think that it's rooted in a place where there wasn't representation. But I also think that like queering things is a very fun piece of being a part of the queer community. I speak for myself, but that's been my experience.
What was your first sorry, I'm like way off the beat here, but I'm like fascinated, so please excuse me.
No.
I interview you, expert gay. What was your first experience that you remember with like slash shipping?
Oh my god.
Yeah.
So, okay. because like the first thing that comes to my mind was something that I didn't even know that I was like queering. I mean, certainly I wasn't queering. I didn't even know the word queer. But when I was a tiny kid, like probably, oh God, 7, 8, 9 in there, I watched Inspector Gadget and Penny, the like, I don't know, was who Penny was. Was Penny Inspector Gadget's kid or like, I mean, he was a robot. So did he have kids? Whatever. This is a topic for another day. But Penny, the like little girl who was probably about my age at the time, I like didn't understand how I was feeling about her, but I knew I had feelings that were like different than any other feelings I had about any other character. So that was like a cartoon as a kid where my brain was like, but Penny, like she seems kind of tough and like cool. And I don't know why I feel the way I feel. So that's like way, 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 way back. And then I think another super young, like queering that I did in my mind before I knew what I was doing, it was Samantha Maselli from Who's the Boss, Alyssa Milano. Who was another Tom, right? Her name was Sam. She was like, I was just talking to somebody about this like route for a lot of queer women that I know that we loved girls with boy names. And it was like, you didn't know why you loved it so much, but it just like, it was like this tiny little clue that something was happening. And Sam, who was a total tomboy, was definitely another early, I think that this person is gay, but I wasn't thinking it consciously. I was just sort of like in it.
Yeah.
Experience.
Oh, that's a really good one. The first time, and this is going to sound so late, obviously, comparatively, but the first time I was aware of slash shipping, someone told me about like Draco, Harry Potter slash fic. And I was like, wait, but they're not. And they're like, yeah, but what if they were? I was like, oh, well, what if they were?
Right.
And like, it sort of went from there, which is like, I don't know if you're familiar with the author Rainbow Rowell, but she has like a whole YA book series, Wayward Son. I forget what the first one, which is basically like Draco, Harry.
Oh my God.
Fanfic. Sort of transmuted to something else. Anyway.
No. And you asked me, Joanna, to like answer that question, which I didn't. I just told you my first two crushes.
Sure.
Because I don't think that I was actually aware of like fan fiction in that capacity until probably my dive into Buffy. Like I just didn't know that that existed. I didn't really know it was a thing. And I think the first time that I really came aware of that was, you know, Buffy Faith, and there's many in the Buffyverse. But I wasn't familiar with that as a younger person at all.
So I'll be very curious if any of our listeners had like particular lost ships slash ships, you know, plenty of options, among the gentlemen of the island. There's some real good candidates, maybe a little later on, among the ladies. So yeah, it's an interesting phenomenon. It's something that like, I remember reaching a bit of a fever pitch a few years ago where like people became really aware of the strength. And I think just like the incredible thirst for representation that came through,
right.
like I think that some people for a while would just roll their eyes at slash shipping because they're like, oh, that's an immature or whatever response to something. But I'm like, no, it's born out of a thirst of having a relationship that reflects your own relationship in the media that you watch, right? And so like,
right. And like, you know, again, I think a lot of this obviously shifts over time, but also so much of the first relationships that those of us who are queer had were like hidden or secret or, you know, people weren't aware of them on the surface because of various reasons. You know, for me, it's like my first relationship with a girl. I was in college and I didn't want my parents to know and she didn't want her parents to know. And so not only is there like an identifiable piece of like, oh, this girl and that girl are like making out on the island, but they're just not telling anybody. But it's also like it mirrors that secrecy that like we know as queer people, there's a whole lot of other stuff going on that you might not know about because we kept it secret as young people or not even young people. So there's like a lot of layers there of why I think that kind of genre is so meaningful to the queer community.
Yeah. Oh, amazing. All right. So hey, folks, bet you didn't know that I was going to turn this episode discussion to that. But I was just thinking, like, a lot of people, this is a really good, I think, Kate episode in terms of, like, showing off how capable she is. Her arms are forever iconic and aspirational. And I was just remembering that I had heard that she was sort of like something of a lesbian. Yeah. Icon. So,
Hard Femme Kate. And also I will say that, like, one of my first experiences in high school, like, making out with a girl for the first time began with a game of Never Have I Ever. So there's a lot of roots here. Yeah. Watching Kate play Never Have I Ever, or whatever they call it in this episode, is also, like, rings a lot of bells for me.
They call it I Never, which drives me crazy, because I'm like, you have to call it Never Have I Ever.
Yeah. Right. Thank you.
Absolutely. All right. So, and that circles, like, let's circle back to Sawyer. And then I have another actual character that I want to ask you about in this episode. But let's circle back to Sawyer. This is just, like, further fodder for the problematic fave sort of type, character type that you and I were talking about last time you were on the show. But a question I have, something that we've been thinking about a lot, is how you modulate an arc like that. Like, if you want to redeem a character, let's say, or you want to show him on a journey, that's what we talked about, right? That the problematic fave is so interesting because they're on a journey, whereas, like, you know, the good guy comes to you fully formed or whatever. Mm-hmm. So if Sawyer is on some kind of journey, and I can either confirm or deny that he is, but if he's on some sort of journey, like, what I like about this episode is it ends with him giving the gun back to Jack, being, like, relatively nice to Jack, but then he has this opportunity to tell Jack this hugely important thing about his father, and then he doesn't. And so that means he's, like, on his journey, but they didn't, like, you know, blow their load and complete his arc.
Right.
You know, midway through season one.
Right.
So, just if you had any thoughts about that, about, like, how to pace something like that.
Yeah, I think, like, right, they're leaving more room. They just introduced an entirely additional arc with him of, like, not only do we have this whole Sawyer backstory, but also, oh shit, now he's connected to Jack in a way that we didn't know that he was before. So we get to watch him grow, not just with, like, Kate and himself, but also now with Jack, what I think is a build. And I also think, like, I was joking with you at the top of, you know, oh, thanks for inviting me to the episode where Sawyer and the boar have a standoff. But I think there's actually something there too, that, like, in a build of a character like this, and we see it, like, Joanna and I have talked about Spike on Buffy, on Buffering Vampire Slayer a whole bunch. And I think we see it with Spike and a lot of these problematic faves, where we get to laugh at them too. And I think that that's partially what this episode does for us with this fucking boar. Like, they're just, like, staring at each other. And obviously there's bigger meaning in it, but it's adding, like, yet another layer of, like, sympathy, empathy, connection to this character that, like, supposedly we, you know, want to hate, love, hate, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. It's a complication. It's a depth. And I think it's a place where a lot of people start to really feel, this is just an excellent episode of Lost, because it's fun and is light and entertaining. And then it's also incredibly emotional and dark at the same time. And the way in which it connects, not just, like, this is not just Sawyer's journey, but the way it sort of bleeds into Jack's journey because of the stuff with Jack's dad in the bar, is, like, it just feels so, like, assured of its place in this larger narrative. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So. And I'm watching it, you know, like, literally I watched the last episode I taped with you, Joanna. And so I don't know exactly what has been unpacked along the way here, but the fact that, like, we're getting the whispers in the jungle, and we're also getting this, like, oh, how are they connected in ways we didn't expect? I think that that's all happening kind of for the first time at this point in the season. Is that right?
What's fun about Sawyer is you see him in the background of the Boone episode that came, like, a couple episodes ago. You see him, like, getting hauled into the police station in Australia.
Right.
So, you know, so that's a mystery how that all connects. But you're Sawyer in the background, or Sawyer's connection to other people has that tiny seed was already planted, but this is the most demonstrable version of that and the most significant version. And then, yeah, this, the whispers we got earlier with Saeed, but Saeed was like drugged up and disoriented and like maybe he's like delusional or whatever. But this is like Sawyer with as much like, you know, bore-addled clarity as he can lend to the situation, like hearing some mysterious whispers in the jungle. It's a big part of the mystery for sure. So
if you say if you say anything better than bore-addled clarity ever in your like run as a podcaster, I will be shocked because that is the best combination of words I've ever heard in my life.
I think last week I said something like "send us your tank toppiest men," and that was like pretty high up there for things that I've said in my life. Lost, it's a great show.
Yeah, brings out the best.
Speaking of last week we spent a lot of time. I know you didn't. You just watched this episode to talk to me. I know that, but like last week was a Charlie episode, which ends with him, you know, killing this other character,
right.
And we see the fallout of that in this episode.
Right.
We've been talking a lot about how in 2019, the character of Charlie has sort of not aged well in terms of, like, I'm not here to, people got mad because they felt we were being too hard on Charlie. I'm not here to trash talk Charlie again necessarily, but I just want to say that, like, I really like this use of him here. I think this is a good use of him. He doesn't strike me as too self-pitying as we've seen from him in the past. It feels like a good little like, yeah, he should be grappling with what he did. He's not sitting around moaning. He's actually like doing things, but you know, he's noticed by Hurley and then he gets this like conversation with Saeed, which I think is really valuable. What do you think of the whole Charlie stuff in this episode?
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's clear, again, coming a little bit out of context, but having seen the series before, like, I think that it's handled really well because I think it's clear that you're seeing a character who's realizing that, yes, they have killed somebody, but also this might be the new normal, not like killing people, but that like, it's not regular life. He's going to just like sit and break open fucking coconuts and try to manage because what the fuck else do you do? You know what I mean? And I think that that's what's, cause yeah, he's not like, he's not wallowing in it. Like you said, Joanna, he's not really handling it great, but he's doing what he knows to do, which is like take some time alone and try to figure out how to move forward from doing this horrific thing.
Right. Right. Boars wallow. Charlie cracks coconuts. Only boars are allowed to wallow in this episode. Yeah. I don't know. It's just, it's interesting. And it's really interesting, you know, as you and I will find, I'm sure, when we examine a show that took place even 10 years before this, but like to look at something this many years later and even like something, I will say this, something that we watched in real time. So like, I remember having no issues with Charlie when I watched the first time, you know what I mean? And so to like watch it now, I'm probably like, was an easier sell on Sawyer than I am this. I still love Sawyer, but it's still like, you're like, oh yeah, yikes. He says,
yeah,
you know, like he says stuff even, you know, deeper into his arc that you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, 2004 me was worlds away from 2019 me. I assume that's true for a lot of people, but it's hard for me to watch even the like Jack and Sawyer scenes. I'm like, really, guys? Like, you know, I just like, I have a lot less room in me for the arc of a broken white cis dude character in 2019. Whereas in 2004, that's kind of all I knew, very close to all I knew. So I was like, yeah, I like this guy. He seems like a better version of the thing I've seen all my life, you know, slightly.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, it's interesting. So I'm really glad that everyone's along on this journey with us, and I hope they join us on my so-called life journey, which like, I told you, okay, yeah, I did want to mention this. So like, in the vein of problematic faves, there is a huge problematic fave at the center of my so-called life, which is the character of Jordan Catalano, played by real life problematic fave Jared Leto. Yeah. and I have for that character, not to spoil too much of our conversation that we're going to have about My So-Called Life, but for that character, he's a different kind of problematic fave than Sawyer. Cause Sawyer is nothing but personality. Sawyer is nothing but like issues and humor and charisma and like all this sort of stuff. Jordan Catalano is the kind of problematic fave where he's a bit of a blank slate that you can just sort of like pour whatever you want into him and he can be that.
Yeah.
And that is really interesting. That kind of character type, you know?
Yeah. And I think really dangerous, like in real life and in television tropes, it's like that character or slash person where you are not given all the personality, at least for me, that's where I stumble the most because I would love to fill in the blanks for you. Yeah. I would love to tell you what you're feeling about me and the world. If you're not saying so yourself, and you're right. Cause I'm thinking about our problematic faves and like Spike and Jamie Lannister and Sawyer, they all have that sort of personality. You know, they're telling you who they are, whether you like it or not. And Jordan, as a precursor to those guys, he's right. Oh, no. I'm learning already. Wow. Yeah. I can't wait to talk about this with you, Joanna.
All right. So go ahead. Join us in this My So-Called Life journey. Go ahead and sign up over on Boiler Room Cast if you want to, like, do the whole thing with us. Find out what, like, to understand Jordan Catalano is to understand where Jared Leto came from, the Jared Leto that we are now currently all saddled with. So, like, you know, go ahead.
I don't want to speak for you, Joanna, but to know Jordan Catalano is also to know where Kristen Russo came from.
Oh,
so,
okay. And,
I mean, this show is a root for me in so many ways. You know, not just Jordan Catalano, but that was a massive part of my understanding of like desire and interest. Like, so there's a lot I think that we're both going to unpack that we already have in the first episode. Like, we got personal in episode one. So I can only imagine where we're going to go in 19 weeks.
I know. I said something. I will tease this. I said something that like I don't tell people in real life. So I shared a thing that happened to me that
right?
Not a thing I share. So go ahead. Have a listen. Thank you so much for coming back, talking to us about Boars and Sawyers and Kates and slash shipping and all the rest.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for having me.
And Kristen, if people want more of your thoughts on Samantha Maselli from Who's the Boss, where can they find you?
Well, you can find me on all social media platforms at Kristen Noeline. It's KristinNoeline. And you can find more about my work using that as my website as well, KristinNoeline.com. And Buffering the Vampire Slayer, the episodic rewatch podcast that I do with Jenny Owen Youngs on Buffy the Vampire Slayer is coming back in just a couple of weeks. And you can find that at BufferingTheVampireSlayer.com. We'll be back on September 18th.
With me, right?
With you, yes. Oh my God.
Is that announced?
Yeah, I need to announce it. Listen, guys, I have too many projects. I'm behind. Yes, yes, with Joanna. Joanna is going to be with us live. So if you're listening to this podcast and you are also coming to our live premiere in Philadelphia on September 13th, which is Friday the 13th,
wow.
You will be getting a face full of me and Jenny and Joanna Robinson, who is flying in for this fucking event. It's going to be so rad, and I have to tell the internet about it immediately.
Oh my God. A faceful. Welcome to a faceful of Joanna Robinson, everything you could have ever wanted. All right. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And people will be hearing plenty of us talk to each other very soon.
Now's that time in our podcast. We read the small council names after I say I have never met a president.
Oh, cheers.
Never met a president.
Oh, which president did you meet, Joanna?
Bill Clinton.
Nice.
Is it?
Well, I don't want that to be endorsement of Bill Clinton. I was just saying it's nice that you've met a president because I have not met a president. So that's how that all works out. Anyway, I'm also not going first. So let's read some small council names. If you are a member of the Patreon at patreon.com/StarWarsSpoilers at the $10 level, we read your name once a quarter like this.
We have a whole bunch of new ones. I'm guessing because they wanted all that David Sims spoiler content. So we want to thank our newcomers, Kelsey Almaguer, Jennifer Barrett, Claire D, Sarah Halliday, Liz Gallagher, Etienne Crepier, Javier Ernesto Fuentes, Kristen Plante, Melissa Hagen, Mark Marquez, Katie Rich, Keith Allison, Ben Goretzky, Amanda Rhodes, Shannon Vincent, Miranda Blankenship, Bailey Carlin, Amanda Sprague, Kyle Davis, and Sean Mee. Thank you guys so much.
And I'd like to add to that, thank you to Kobe Jackson, Katie Chapman, Matt Thompson, Allison Van Winkle, Davia Gianni, Research Flat Earth, why not look up the Snyder Cut while you're at it, Carrie Welby Solomon, Zoe Fuchs, Florence, Vanessa Nimi, Maggie Kennerman, Rick Russell, Renee, Nathan Mellahan, Jennifer, Holly Kurikos, Justin, Time Traveler Creative, Dan A., and Mark Schrade.
All right, guys, I also have a list of people we would like to thank, and that includes Corey, Sebesta, Rosemary, Terry Dormer, Christina Rudy, TLS, Robin, Max Heilbrunn, Benjamin Kreichbaumer, okay,
yeah,
Saqib, Shauna Evans, Eric Dornbrook, Olivia Whitehead, Sandra, Alex, Ben Miller, Susan Newman, Chad Hamilton, Philip Anderson, Casey, Sean Brun, Jacob Sistrunk. Oh, sorry, so pretty. Thank you, Joanna.
You're welcome.
And thank you to all of you for being members of the Small Council. That's pretty rad.
To talk some stormy thoughts, which I don't know how we're going to start, but this is definitely a good week for Antagonist Locke, because that's a creepy story. And the way to just walk out of a jungle super sweaty, eating fruit with coffee at the exact moment that the main character of the episode showing extreme weakness, that seems like a tool of the Man in Black to me. What do you think, Joanna, who usually thinks I'm crazy?
I think if anyone is Man of Blacking in this episode, it's that fucking boar.
Yeah.
I think the boar is obviously the antagonist of this episode.
Okay, so if the boar is the antagonist of the episode,
took his shirt out of the bag and pissed on it.
Which, you know, is very prescient, but let me ask you something here. Does the boar actually exist?
Yeah, I think it does.
Okay, so it's like a man versus nature tale, but since this is a weird, morally fucked up island, the nature also has, like, some malevolent presence.
Either that, or it's this super, like, intricate Machiavellian plan that Kate has come up with to get the gun from Sawyer, which is to create a fake boar that attacks him in the night, because she seems to be kind of around this whole thing. So I got more questions for Kate.
Are you saying Kate took Sawyer's shirt out of his bag and then
beat on it?
Or like that shot where he's holding a gun and we see Kate like standing off to the side. If we just pan down, she'd have like a little remote control.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Old steady boar.
Yeah. Is this the island giving a whisper from his past? Is it Frank Duckett unable to move on? Just a boar, or did the island have a say in it?
I mean, I think the island definitely had a say in all of it. I was wondering specifically if this is Man in Black related, because we've established canon has established that the whispers on the island are just people that can't move on. So it makes sense to me that Frank, the shrimp shack shooter, would
shooting.
Have whisper power.
Sawyer is the shrimp shack shooter. Frank is the shrimp shack shootee, right?
The shootee. But here's my crazy pants, it could be the other way theory. So when Sawyer wakes up, he says the boar is looking at him, which is all we know the Man in Black needs in order to scan somebody's memories. So if the whisper did end up
clickety-clack.
Yeah. Just get an old clickety-clack memory scan. And then you have this trouble boar that's allowed to, you know, piss on shirts and stuff.
The boar black is what you're saying.
Yes.
All right. I have a question for you. does the show believe in fate?
Whoa.
No.
Locke believes in fate.
Yes, but he's on the bad side.
No, he's on the deluded side. Come on.
If the question is between these two, like, god people who are fighting, can humans be good, wouldn't that be inherently, like, against fate? Like, just that argument in general?
Neil, what do you think?
Well...
And a reminder to you, sir, that in 5 minutes, you're up on Never Ever.
Oh, no. Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting, that last thing that Dave said there, which is, like, if the argument between Jacob and the Men in Black is, can humans be good? It's, can humans defy sort of their fate or their mold or their destiny? You know, like, they're setting up this whole idea that, like, you know, certain people are selected for this very specific kind of punishment, but it's to see if any of them can, like, break free of that, I guess.
Is it punishment, or is it a test, or is it both? Is it?
Yeah, I guess that's the question. Okay. Is if you feel like it's some sort of punishment, then it is fate. If you feel like if it's a test, then it's not related to fate. It is a test to see what they will do with their free will. So, that is the ultimate, like, science and faith delineation thing. Cause if you're the man of faith, then you believe that something is punishing you, or something is meant to have, these bad things are meant to happen to you so that you can either become a different thing and go on and, you know, be reincarnated as a dog. But if you're into science, then you think everything is solvable. Everything's a solvable problem.
Well, what about if we're talking about these deities, right? And isn't Jacob's thesis, doesn't his thesis have to be like, people can be good? Right, people have free will, people can be good. If we're doing like a Job thing, right? And he's God.
Right.
So if that's the case, then my question, and just as a reminder to people who are in the spoiler section but maybe haven't refreshed recently, there's this whole thing towards the end of the show where you find out that Jacob was like in these characters' lives when they were younger, like touching them and guiding them in certain ways, you know, lending a pen to Sawyer or like, et cetera, et cetera. At Sun and Jin's wedding, and like touching them literally, and also, you know, sort of figuratively marking their fate for the island. So isn't that the show saying that there is something to do with, like, that they have been guided towards this spot, this test?
Yeah,
possibly. But then if they set off the bomb that makes the electromagnetic thing unstable, that becomes the station that brings down their plane, then that's a loop that can't be broken.
All right, you're right. Once we bring time travel into it, it gets very sticky. All right. Next storm thing. The Tampa Job trivia. Do you guys know this trivia?
No.
So Hibbs is talking to Sawyer. And he's like,
is this related to the X-Files somehow?
Yes. No. It's related to the Terminator franchise, obviously. Hibbs is talking to Sawyer, and he goes, like, you know, this will make up for the Tampa job. And Sawyer goes, what on earth could possibly make up for the Tampa job? And so we never find out what the Tampa job was. But originally, when they filmed Adrift, which is season 2 episode, the flashbacks were to the Tampa job. And they just didn't like it. So they made it a Michael flashback episode instead. So the Tampa job was filmed, but they never released it. So release the Tampa job cut.
Tampa job.
It had to be really bad for Lost to be like, we're going to cut Robert Patrick out of this episode.
And we're going to go with Michael instead.
Yeah.
All right. So. And now I want to circle back to my killing Sawyer thing.
Yeah.
Because there's multiple times, right? Because we have the plot of this episode, somebody sets James Ford up to kill someone for them. And that person is Sawyer, or is not Sawyer, or whatever. Like, this is the same thing that Locke does to Sawyer later when he sets him up to kill his father for him because he can't do it. And then his father, of course, is the real Sawyer. And that's who Sawyer kills in the belly of the Black Rock. So I don't know. I just thought that was interesting, right? This whole like, whoa, kill Sawyer, right? I really feel like I have not been smoking any weed, but I sort of felt like I did when I watched the episode. Well, I gotta say, like, this Drew Goddard, so like, we know that the island is in purgatory, but no episode, maybe other than like White Rabbit, has made me feel like the island is purgatory like this episode.
Well, because the Christian Shepherd Sawyer thing is so improbable, and like for him to have met Christian Shepherd at that exact point and then crash with Jack seems super purgatorily and like weird, especially because like we know Christian's ghost is in the jungle, and now we're back in the jungle with another guy having a ghostly experience, and it's revealed that he has connections to Christian Shepherd. I bet there's like, if you're watching the series now, there's like the possibility that not only is it purgatory, but that Christian Shepherd's like fucking Satan, like pulling everybody's weird strings.
Yeah, fair enough. Yes, that's true. Yes. Who is Christian Shepherd, actually? Neil, the alarm went off. It's your turn.
Excellent. I have one. Never have I ever stepped foot on the island of Manhattan.
Oh.
Oh, fuck you.
Which is fun facts about me.
We gotta change that.
I know. This is what they tell me.
No, we'll just go the whole way and have a live show in Brooklyn. And then we'll be like, ah, fuck you, Neil.
Well, I was gonna say that, like, if, you know, if anyone is going to do an episode about an island that is, like, quasi-purgatory, even though we know it's not purgatory.
Where the devil lives.
Have purgatorial sort of things. It's Drew Goddard who did fucking Cabin in the Woods and Bad Times at the El Royale, which is the same story, right?
I thought you were leading to, there's a draft of Ghostbusters 3 written by Dan Aykroyd where Trump literally plays the devil.
No, but
in
like
Manhattan.
But this is Drew God's fixation, right? It's a combination. Like, well, do you guys know the story of like how Drew Goddard got his start in Hollywood?
No. No.
He was like an assistant at, let's say, Fox Studios, 20th Century Fox. And he was running the office betting pool about Survivor. And Marty Noxon just like thought he was like so fun and cute and interesting. This like assistant who's running this like Survivor office pool that he like started. That she was like, you should come meet Joss and maybe like do some stuff with us for Buffy. Like, why not? And that's how he got his start. So like his genesis, the way he like caught people's eye is like this Survivor pool that he came up with. And he is like a known Survivor obsessive. So like it makes sense to tap Drew, who was already working on Alias. It makes sense to tap Drew to work on this, even though he didn't come on like in a fuller capacity until season 3, but like so that Survivor element is in his blood, but also like the idea of purgatory, of testing, like I think about the Bad Time, sorry for my Drew Goddard thesis, but I think of Bad Time at the El Royale and Cabin in the Woods as both very Survivor-esque stories, right? You've got like a group of archetypes sort of stuck together in an extreme location. I guess it's a very Lost concept too. But then like he makes both of those things very much a sort of purgatory, kind of, you are being tried and tested and judged. And in Cabin in the Woods is a literal devil, and Bad Times the El Royale, it's, I don't know, whatever, the devil in the form of Charles Manson. But, you know, this is what's cooking in Drew's little noggin at all times.
Well, it makes,
so.
And I like him for this episode because at this point the show does kind of seem okay. Like they never say it that it's purgatory, but the show is probably at this point okay with people believing that, because we haven't introduced, you know, time travel. We haven't introduced Dharma. And so the show is probably fine. If people end up with the conclusion that these people are being tested, it just sort of enhances the mystery, which I think was like one of their number one things, is like, we got to keep people hooked. So,
oh yeah, I think the show Is Purgatory would have actually been an easy sell to the audience at this point, where it would have been like, oh yeah, that's cool,
right?
Yeah,
it isn't until you get to like the time travel and then the sideways jumps and the island moving start to dismiss, until the purgatory thing sort of fades to the background.
But meanwhile, they're definitely still in a spot where they're trying not to, well, I guess at this point with the back nine, they're like slightly less concerned, but they're trying not to spook. What they said, is that they needed to have plausible scientific deniability for all the events that were happening on the island so that the network didn't get spooked. So they were not at a point yet where they could go full sci-fi because they promised, the network that all of these phenomena could be provable by science if they wanted to. You know what I mean? So, the Boar there has to be a version of this episode where the Boar is also just a Boar.
Mm-hmm. Right. Do you think there's a version of this episode that maybe only exists in everybody's minds where there's like 30 people surrounding Sawyer in the jungle going,
yes, I want that version. Yeah.
What are we doing tonight, guys? Same thing we do every night. Wait for one of these yahoos to wander out in the jungle so we can whisper.
Or the Boar goes like running off into the underbrush and then it turns into renowned Chicago after Jeff Perry, who played Frank, the Shrimp Shack shootie.
With digital fur technology.
We should also say here in the storm that, of course, there's a great Red Sox reveal in season three. What I can't remember. So in season three, to remind people, when Ben has, you remember Ben, folks, when Ben has, Jack.
Everyone locked up.
Hostage.
It's Jack's, he's got Jack, Sawyer, and Kate. Yeah.
To prove that he has access to off-island stuff, he shows them a tape of the Red Sox winning the World Series in 2004. And I can't remember. I don't think that in that episode, when that happens, Jack is like, maybe it's in the previously on Lost, but like, I don't think in that episode, Jack's like, holy shit, my dad always used to say, you know what I mean? Like,
no, I think if I remember correctly, I think Jack says it to somebody.
Oh, probably Juliet.
When he's in one of the conversations with Juliet before that episode, he says something. He does the line again.
But it's just like,
right, because if he doesn't say it, how does Ben even know?
Yeah, I guess so. But how much that means to Jack in terms of his daddy issues is like so huge, right? That's such a cool payoff two seasons later for this moment.
Right.
So,
yeah.
The best Christian Shepherd payoff.
Right. Cause it's Christian Shepherd's, it's his faith in the fact that he has this destiny to be a shitty person that bothers. I think that's one of the things that bothers Jack, you know, as a man of science.
two more bits of storm stuff. We see the genesis of the burial shovel, which we will see more of.
It will be coming back.
Lots of people got to get buried.
Charlie made that burial. I think later they also have like a hollowed out bamboo shovel thing that they make.
That's a pretty clever move.
It is. It's pretty. We're gonna have to bury more people. Let's get something better than this golf club that Charlie has rigged together. And then lastly, and this is something that I actually have never realized in the rewatch, but the last thing we hear Sawyer's dad's or James's real dad say is open the damn door, right? Mm-hmm. And that is something we hear Sawyer say a bunch on the show. He says it in The Brig and The Shape of Things to Come and Because You Left. This is a thing that we hear him say a bunch of times. In The Brig is the Brig is where he like kills real Sawyer, and we hear him say it again and again and again, open the damn door to lock. So that feels like it can't be accidental. And I think that's pretty cool. So
Lost. You're great. And now, like we've said last week, this is like we're all good episodes to the rest of the first season. So
the sweet spot.
Past the Charlies, onward and upward. Do we have anything else before we wrap up? Or do we have another Never Have I Ever?
We could do one more for the road. Do I?
All right. It's your, you're up, so let's do it.
How can I get both of you at once?
I feel a lot of pride in that I was able to get one of those.
Oh, I don't know if this is true for you, Dave. Never have I ever owned a dog.
Oh, I have, yes.
Myself, yes. Personally?
I mean, Neil, you own that dog. Come on. That's your dog.
All right, I'll drink. One for Nico.
A miniature schnauzer and a chihuahua, neither of which names I will share with you because then you'll know half my passwords.
Okay, I'm going to do one more before we go, and it goes something like this. Never have I ever killed a man.
Oh, I don't know.
I'm still not drinking.
I don't have to drink. I don't think I've killed
let
anyone.
Let the record show.
Okay.
As far as I know.
Okay.
I've never killed a man.
Listener, you're listening.
Drink.
Drink.
All right, Neil, where are we going next week?
Well, Dave, next week, the episode 17 is called In Translation. If you had to guess who that's about, you would probably guess either Sun or Jin, and you'd be right because it's Jin. It's a Jin episode. It's an excellent episode, and I can't wait to revisit it next week.
Excellent. Until then, where can people find more of our work around the internet? Let's start this week with Joanna Robinson.
You can find me on vanityfair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. And you can hear me on the Still Watching Little Gold Men and Boiler Room podcasts.
And Mr. Neil Miller.
Well, you know, you can always get me over at filmschoolrejects.com or on Twitter at oneperfectshot and at rejects. It's Terrifying Rituals Week over on Film School Rejects. So we're writing all about weird rituals that movies have tried to sell us. And it's getting kind of messed up. And don't forget, follow the show at Storm Podcast on Twitter. It's great. We're great.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can follow me on Twitter at DA70, where I will tweet out links to anything that I've written. That schedule's kind of long lead. No idea when the next thing is, but I will be weekly podcasting on the Fighting in the War Room podcast. It's a podcast about pop culture. I bet we're going to talk about like Spider-Man or the Midsummer Director's Cut or something. Oh, no, we're going to talk about Loose. It's a bad movie. Go check that out wherever podcasts are served to you. And I'm here every week telling you because it's important to safety at all ages, but especially as you get older, and especially if you're in a haunted jungle in the middle of nowhere, don't fall down.
I'm chasing a boar in a jungle of mystery. wait, I want to do over. I'm chasing a ghost boar in the jungle.
Out in the Nigerians.